The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, can everyone hear me? Okay, I remembered to turn on the mic this time, so I'll try and keep my voice up. Just start by saying how much I appreciate what people are sharing in relationship to speech and the power of speech and how it works in our lives. The Buddha said, to everyone that is born, an axe is born in his or her mouth. That really is a poignant image about the power of our words to injure. And just, you know, and I think there's an equal power that our words can heal. So just recognizing the special place of speech along the path, the Buddha gave it its very own category in the five precepts, right? It wasn't under the umbrella of non-harming. It has its own category. And I think that's something to remember, how central it is to the path and how central it is in the shaping of our character, also central to the path. The wise ones fashion speech with their thought, sifting it as grain is sifted through a sieve. So sometimes when I have the wish to sort of be able to practice intensively in a monastery, you know, with those protections of the monastic walls, I realize I have speech all day long that I can practice with. You know, this is part of what we do as lay people in our human interactions. So the Buddha taught four aspects of wise speech that I just want to go over with you, kind of what those four aspects are. And they're stated both as restraints, kind of in the negative, and as ideals or aspirations that are stated in the positive. And the first one is abstinence from false speech. So abstinence from lying. And so instead, we make an effort to speak truthfully. And in speaking truthfully, we give the gift of trustworthiness. We spare people of confusion and of doubt. And I think it's important, you know, to decide to make a commitment to speaking truthfully, like really to take that on. Speak truthfully, because there's so many ways, big and small, where we can go astray in that way. And I thought I would just offer, you know, a few examples of how this, you know, kind of has operated in my life. You know, and not just sort of truth and falsehood, but spin too, like how we spin things to sort of lean words towards our advantage, you know, like that's really interesting territory also, where the spin, the kind of protection of self becomes more important than actual clarity, than actual full disclosure and truth. And I was thinking about, you know, Spruce brought up the question about when there's power differentials. And you know, telling the truth is easy when there aren't consequences, right? But when there are consequences to truth-telling, when we're vulnerable, that's when the territory, of course, becomes really sticky. You know, when we fear retaliation, when we fear maybe I'll lose my partner, maybe I'll lose my job if I speak in this way. I was thinking recently, we have sort of new administration where I teach, and our new chair was asking for all our course evaluations. She wants copies of all our course evaluations, and I teach a course that I am particularly insecure about. Like it's just a course that I'm on my edge every time I teach it, and I try to rethink it anew, but I'm always on my edge. And for this particular course, my course evaluations fall kind of right in the middle. You know, they're not glowing and they're not negative. They kind of fall in the middle. But there, in this particular set of evaluations, there were two that were really like swords, like what they said about me, about my teaching, about the course, and they were crafted beautifully. I haven't done this yet, but my thought was, I'm just going to take those two out. You know, and give the rest. So, because this is a vulnerable job, right? I'm a fixed term position, I'm hired year to year, da, da, da. So there's consequences. You know, those words they make a print on people when they read them. So it's like, I don't want to, like, not understand that there are consequences to that. But there's also consequences to removing those two evaluations, like a kind of self-doubt, like I'm a faker. You know, like that when we sort of aren't living it with transparency and full disclosure, there can be that sort of, like, I realize these little places where we cut corners, where we don't tell, where we hide, that can be a cause for self-doubt. So that's really interesting territory to me. And this is, too, where, like, that commitment, you know, what do I value? You know, what is right speech? What is honesty? You know, why should that carry so much weight? And why should I value that in this moment over protecting myself and the consequences of giving this new boss these mediocre and bad evaluations? So you know, this is where I think we're challenged. Another, you know, and I think even in the places where it feels less consequential, I think it's an important practice, you know, just to be grounded in that. And I was just thinking, like, how all day long, you know, there are choices that we can make around this. Like, for just the other day, for instance, I was sending an email to this cast of dancers that I'm working with that, you know, I was giving them some good news about a possible opportunity, and then I signed, "I love working with each of you." That was my kind of sign. And then I realized, I love working with all of them except one. You know? You know, it's like, that was like a realization. That was the truth. I love working with all of them except one. So am I gonna say that? You know? And so it seems harmless, and maybe I could even argue, well, maybe if in saying that one dancer with whom we're having difficulty with each other, maybe that would cause a little opening. But it's actually not the truth. So I just said, "I love working with you," just kind of more generally. "I just love working with you," because that felt like I could say that. So somehow, yeah, like just to have that level of meticulousness and clarity in my own heart and the ways in which I communicate feel like an important practice. This is Bhikkhu Bodhi. "Truthful speech establishes a correspondence between our own inner being and the real nature of phenomena, allowing wisdom to rise up and fathom their real nature. Thus, much more than an ethical principle, devotion to truthful speech is a matter of taking our stand on reality rather than illusion, on the truth grasped by wisdom rather than the fantasies woven by desire." And I think, too, like, the Dhamma, the word Dhamma also means truth. And if we want to align with the Dhamma, you know, we have to align with truth in our own hearts, you know, like there has to be an appreciation of that power, of that integrity. So that's the first one, abstinence from false speech. And then there's abstinence from slanderous speech, statements intended to divide or create hostility between people. So instead, the follower of the path should always speak words that promote friendship and harmony between people, words that create concord. Many years ago, when I was on retreat with Steve Armstrong, one of the senior teachers in this tradition, he challenged us to experiment for a while with not talking about people if they're not in the room under any condition. Just don't talk about people if they're not present. So that for me was an interesting practice. It's not sustainable, but what that left me with was when I'm speaking about people, I try to imagine that they're there. And how does that temper what I might say about them? You know, and I just realize it infuses my speech with more respect, and I'm less likely to do that sort of slanderous, divisive thing, even if there's ill will, even if there's ill will. So just imagining that person sitting there, still saying what I need to say, but afterward, if that person had overheard that, I could live with that. I could feel comfortable with my speech under those conditions. Recently, I was speaking with a colleague about another colleague, and you know, I was speaking truthfully. I was speaking about matters that were relevant, but I think I also said something that slightly diminished another colleague, something in my words. I realized that, not fully in the moment, but I went back to my office, that Hiriyotapa, the wholesome guardians of the world, it rose in my heart, ooh, you know. And I went back out, and I found my colleague, and I said, I should not have said that. I just did that. I said, I should not have said that. And I realized it was a little weird, you know, it's a little, you know, maybe a little bit weird, but it felt like absolutely the right thing to do. And partly what I was saying to that colleague that who I had spoken to was that I don't like to engage in that kind of conversation. Like, I realized in that moment I may have eroded her trust in me, that because I can talk this way about another colleague. So that was part of what that conversation was, that I don't believe in that kind of conversation. And I'll tell a similar story. A few years ago, I met an acquaintance. It was like in an art fair or something. And he had been to the Wednesday night practice group here at Common Ground. And just in the midst of our conversation, he was talking about this particular evening and something that Mark had said, a story Mark told about his life that was a little bit exposing and a little bit funny. And he was just, he just was telling me because he got so much sort of delight out of the story. And I said, oh, yeah, I remembered the story, and it was just, it's just this very brief interaction. But then a few days later, he called me up on the phone, and this is someone who would not call me up on the phone. We don't know each other on that level. But he called me up, and he said he'd felt a little bit sensitive about what he had said to me at the art fair, like kind of in the sense of that maybe what happens on the Wednesday night conversation should sort of stay in the room, and that maybe what he said is something Mark might feel vulnerable about him just sharing. And I didn't perceive that to be the case, but I so appreciated his sensitivity and willingness to call. Just, I'm sure that was not an easy phone call to make. Just because it hung in his heart in that little way, and just, again, just sort of wanting to have that level of meticulousness around his speech and just not, you know, not wanting that to hang in his heart, I'm sure, in the way that it was. So I have remembered that example often. So, like, part of his example was what helped me to go out to my colleague and say those words. You know, we can be examples to each other in that way. And also, just to appreciate, again, the power of our words. Like, you know, I've had the experience when someone has spoken ill of somebody that I didn't know that well, and those words were woven into my perception of that person that I didn't know very well. And it took a long time to kind of uproot those words that actually I found to be not true. And so how we kind of create each other with our words and with our perceptions. And so what particularly dangerous territory this is in terms of our human relationships. And along with that, this is just a side note, you know, when we're with people, I feel, who recognize and see into our beautiful qualities, I believe that those beautiful qualities are strengthened, you know, so. Okay, so the third one, abstinence from harsh speech, from speech that is angry and bitter, which cuts into the hearts of others. Instead, one's speech should always be soft, gentle, and affectionate. Here, I think it's important to look at our intention, because as we know, soft, gentle speech can have an axe buried in it. And loud speech can come out of love. So the Buddha says, if the mind is not based in the Brahma-viharas, kindness, sympathetic joy, compassion, equanimity, then there is an obscuration, that speech is not aligned with an enlightened mind. I was reminded recently of a story about Thich Nhat Hanh. Many of you probably know him, a Vietnamese monk in the Zen tradition, Mahayana tradition. There's a story about in his Plum Village in France, in his small community. Actually, it's a large community, but there were two monks that he had assigned to do some kind of task, and one of the monks sort of didn't hold up his end. And then the other monk got really irritated, sort of like, you know, this is all falling on him. This other guy isn't doing what he was supposed to be doing. And during the community gathering, the monk who felt, you know, like he was put upon a little bit, he stood up and kind of made his litany of complaints about this monk that felt very just, that this guy hadn't done that. And somewhere in the middle of his, you know, expressing himself, Thich Nhat Hanh basically told him to sit down and be quiet. And he said his words precisely. And the monk said, I was just speaking my truth. And then Thich Nhat Hanh said, if it isn't spoken with metta, it isn't true. Now, isn't that a challenge? You know? I heard Irina Weissman say once when she was being challenged, I heard your words, but I didn't hear your friendliness. And the Buddha also said, our speech may be pleasing or displeasing. So I feel like that's really important to say, you know, that our speech may not be pleasing to the person who's receiving it, and that's not the barometer that we need to pay attention to. So someone was talking about kind of the willingness to confront, you know, allow conflict to express itself as it needs to sometimes. And then the fourth one, abstinence from idle chatter, from gossip. Instead, one should speak words that are meaningful, significant, and purposeful. So Orin Sofer once described what he felt, sort of the essence of right speech is right speech that leads to our freedom. That was kind of his, what he felt is essential, right speech that leads to our deliverance, our deepening freedom. So do we use our words to bring healing or clarity to a situation? Or are we just speaking? Is this benefiting anyone? So when we're engaged in useless speech, this can be a place for mindfulness, like what's going on here? Who am I trying to be in this moment? How does this taste? I used to think this was a Buddhist quote, but this is actually Gandhi, who said, "Speak only if it improves upon the silence." And I loved this when I first heard it years ago. Speak only if it improves upon the silence. Because, you know, because then when you do speak, your words have real weight. You know, that was, I had sort of some romantic feeling around that, and I still love it. But I realized that practice has had a shadow side for me, you know, kind of as a woman who sometimes feels my speech isn't worthy, you know, or you know, as someone who has learned that silence is sometimes the safest path. So for me, I've had to really look at that shadow side of that instruction. And for me, my own personal medicine has been to be more daring, you know, speak up, even if it doesn't quite seem like quite the right thing, because when this is what you need to practice and learn from. And sometimes I realize too, like silly speech or light speech, it can be a vehicle for kindness. So even on the surface, it may feel like it seems like it's empty, but actually we're expressing our love through that speech. The Buddha said to his son Rahula, "Having performed a verbal act, you should reflect on it. If, on reflection, you know that it led to self-affliction, to the affliction of others, or to both, it was an unskillful verbal act with painful consequences, painful results, then you should confess it, reveal it, lay it open to the teacher or to a knowledgeable companion in the holy life. Having confessed it, you should exercise restraint in the future. But if on reflection you know that it did not lead to affliction, it was a skillful verbal action with happy consequences, happy results, then you should stay mentally refreshed and joyful, training day and night in skillful mental qualities." Yeah, and this goes back to what Mark was talking about, you know, the bright guardians of the world, you know, that tell us in our hearts, you know, was this skillful or wasn't this skillful, and that we can feel that and we can trust that quality in the heart. So I thought we could just end this this part, and maybe I'll just say these one more time just as a recollection. So the four aspects of speech: abstinence from false speech, abstinence from lying, speaking truthfully in the positive; abstinence from slanderous speech, instead follow the path that promotes friendship and harmony. The third one is abstinence from harsh speech. Instead, one's speech should be gentle, soft, affectionate. And then the fourth one, abstinence from idle chatter, gossip. Instead, one should speak with words that are meaningful, significant, and purposeful. So let's end with a short meditation, just with a reflection about how we've used our own speech, maybe a time that we spoke in a way that caused harm, and then maybe another time when we can think of where our speech came from courage or compassion and was a cause for goodness. So we'll just do a short 5-minute meditation about this. So let's come into our sitting posture. Feeling the firmness of our sits bones against the chair, our cushion, and our spine organizing upright out of this space with clarity and alertness. And again, let's bring the attention into the area of the heart. We can relax the heart as best we can. You know, as though that relaxation of the heart were bottomless. And let's begin by recalling a time that we have spoken in a way that caused harm. And just hold it gently in the space of the heart without judgment. We can feel protected by our intention to learn and grow from our mistakes. Staying intimate with the felt sense in the heart. And just feeling the protection of the bright guardians of the world, our wholesome fear and our wholesome regret that are our teachers. That enliven us and are a cause for joy. And next, let's think of a time when we have spoken from a place of courage or compassion or wisdom, and that it was a cause for goodness. And let that settle in the heart.